last episode of the semester here at Assignment Radio. And today's theme is...
No, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Well, don't change the players.
I'm not changing nobody.
A first kiss, a first home run, a first job. There's something about when you do something important for the first time, it never quite leaves you. It sticks in your memory and acts as a mental blueprint for all your future experiences.
Who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
Stay off of first, will you?
Well, what do you want me to do?
Now, what's the guy's name on third base?
Well, what's on second?
I'm not asking you who's...
Like that immortal Abbott and Costello bit, baseball can be confusing for those like me who are unfamiliar with the terminology. In preparation for our first story, here are a few baseball terms I'll save you the trouble of looking up. A round tripper. It's deceptively simple. It just means a home run. The box. It's the area around home plate where the batter stands to bat. Jack, which I had a really hard time finding out what that meant. I think it means when you hit a ball really hard. Here's Assignment Radio's Brent Morrell to explain it better than I ever could.
It happens in an instant. The bat makes contact with the baseball, and the possibilities of where it could go are endless. Hitting it over the fence is almost always the best result. Once you hit a home run, you join a fraternity of greats like Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle that had the power to knock one out of the park. Getting that first home run is easier for players blessed with physical gifts. For others, it's more difficult.
Ever since I could walk, I've never been a home run hitter. I let the other guys do that and have the glory.
Craig Aiken is a freshman center fielder for the University of Oklahoma's baseball team. He's generously listed at 5'10" on the Sooners roster. He's known for his speed, but he showed at a young age he has some power.
It was coach pitch. I was 6 or 7. I remember my dad was standing there throwing, and I'd always get frustrated. He was the head coach, and I'd get frustrated. He wouldn't throw me a strike.
Aiken waited for the right pitch.
He threw one in there, and I hit it, and I sprinted. I mean, I was on an absolute dead sprint around the bases. And I slid headfirst into home. I was so excited. And it was one of the best memories playing baseball, for sure.
Watching the pitch he threw go over the fence, Dad was feeling proud of his son, right?
Absolutely. My dad was, he was kind of embarrassed that I was the guy who slid into home plate, but hey, I lived it up, for sure.
Giving up a home run to your son is one thing, but imagine when the person hitting it is your best friend.
Dylan Herman, he's a petroleum engineer at Texas A&M. He's done with baseball, but he always lets me hear about it.
Ethan Carnes was a dominant pitcher at Klein Oak High School in Houston, Texas.
I remember I had 2 strikes on him, threw him a curveball, and he took me deep. And that's, I'll never forget that, and to this day he still talks about it.
Newton's third law of motion says for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Hitting a home run is no different.
Oh, yeah, deflating feeling. I remember that was one of the hardest games to lose because it was my best friend that, you know, ended up hitting the homer and getting the run scored off of me. So, but yeah, that's the one I remember the most.
Carnes and Aiken still play the game they love. For others, all they have are the memories of the past.
It's something that you grow up always wanting to do, and finally doing it, it's just something that you, that's why it's so memorable. You just never forget it.
Chase Goodnight played baseball all his life. Sifting through the highlights of his career, Goodnight remembers his first round tripper.
Just put a normal swing on it. Thought I'd gotten a hold of it decently well. Bases were full, actually. And, you know, I put a good swing on it. I take off out of the box. And I'm not thinking it went out or anything like that. Thinking, like, you know, maybe a couple bags here.
In his senior year at Tahlequah High School, Goodnight was still looking for his first home run.
So I'm breaking out to make a turn, and I look up, and the guy on first is tagging up. Like, he's on the base still. And so I stop almost, like, coming to a complete stop, and then that's when we both see the ball go out at the same time.
Goodnight's teammate of many years, Taylor Tannehill, was just as surprised as everyone else.
My reaction was a lot like the guy on first base. You know, he tagged up. We were kind of sitting there. Nobody really knew if he was going out or not.
Tannehill never hit a home run himself, but he does know what it's like to give one up. The situation couldn't have been any worse. Tannehill was called to the mound after the best pitcher on his team gave up 13 runs to the top-ranked baseball team in the state.
All of a sudden, I hear Tannehill go warm up. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Got to play the, got to go throw against the number one team in the state. keep in mind there's scouts everywhere.
It didn't take long for the overwhelmed pitcher to give up a homer.
The second pitch, toss it up there, it's gone. I'm like, shake it off, look at my coach. He's like, not a big deal. We're down 13-0. Just need you to get in some innings.
Everyone remembers that first one. But what happened next seared this story into his memory.
So the next guy comes up, and he also hits home run. So first two batters I face, back-to-back jacks. And that one kind of set me down a little bit. I was a little upset about that one.
Tannehill realized then that maybe the pros weren't an option. But at least he can boast that he didn't give up a home run to a future St. Louis Cardinal.
He hit one off the very top of the wall, and I thought for sure it was gone. So there is a silver lining to the story. I like to say that I held Pete Cosman in check that day.
And that is driven out to deep left center field, and this one is gone. It's a home run. How about that pop? Pete Cosma.
The Tulsa native has hit three home runs off major league pitchers in his two seasons in the majors, including one that went viral when a fan jumped out of the way of the ball, letting it hit his girlfriend.
Fastball, and look where it goes, up to that second depth. It hits that young lady over the yellow line. She's fine, but nice going, boyfriend. Jumps out of the way, and don't protect your girl.
But if it makes him feel any better, Pete Cosma still only has a double off Taylor Tannehill. For Assignment Radio, Brant Morrell.
And now for another kind of run. Assignment Radio's Haley Thornton follows Nathan Gunter, managing editor for Oklahoma Today, as he attempts the Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon for the first time.
At 9:30 on a Sunday morning, Nathan Gunter leans against his blue Jeep stretching, facing the Oklahoma City National Memorial. It's a comfortable 65 degrees.
Today is my longest one, my last one before the half marathon, and it's 10 miles.
This final training run came a week before the Oklahoma City Memorial half marathon. He's nervous, but takes pride in embracing his new goal.
And, you know, I'm just in my 30s. I'm in my early 30s. But I've even noticed in myself, you stop thinking of life in terms of new things that you can try and start thinking in terms of, like, your habits and your rituals and your doing things the same way, you know. And so it's been really good to kind of open up a new door for myself and try something new and find that I love it.
He opened that door and challenged himself to run the Oklahoma City Memorial Half Marathon on April 28th.
I have friends that run for pure fun and friends that have run the Boston Marathon, that regularly run the Boston Marathon. It just, 26 miles sounded a little daunting to me, but I thought 13, I bet I could do 13. It was just a curiosity thing. I wanted to see if I could do it.
Starting in late January, Gunter planned out a 3.5-month training program for first-time runners.
Basically what it starts with is you do short runs during the week, and then on Sunday you do a long run. And that long run starts off at 3 miles, and it gets longer and longer each Sunday.
It wasn't easy at first. A few weeks in, he took about 10 days off with a minor foot injury. On March 16th, he competed in the Shamrock the Ville 5K in Bartlesville. He'd been running about 6 miles on those weekly long runs by that point, so there was no reason he should have been so tired as he neared the end of the 3.1-mile course.
So I got up to the end of the... I got up right to where I could see the finish line, and these 3 9-year-old girls in green tutus just blow past me. I mean, they're going a ton faster than I am. And there's no way I'm going to catch up with them. But right as one of them passes me, she goes, "See ya," like that at me. And I was like, what? A, I was just passed by 3 9-year-old girls, which as a 33-year-old guy who runs regularly is a little bit like, oh my goodness. And B, I was like, you are so lucky I did not just push you down.
Despite those few mishaps, he followed his training program almost to the letter and eagerly awaited April 28th.
When I started this, I thought, I'm going to get to the week before and I'm going to be terrified. I'm going to be afraid. I'm going to think, you know what? I've come this far. Why don't I just call it quits? No one will have to know. But I can't wait. I really can't wait to cross that finish line.
Nearly 25,000 runners gathered before dawn at the west side of the Oklahoma City National Memorial 2 Sundays ago.
This is the time when we remember, just prior to our start, We ask you now for 168 seconds of silence, please.
Marathoners, many of them wearing red socks in honor of the tragedy in Boston, were packed shoulder to shoulder in the staging corral along Harvey Avenue in the shadow of the memorial's 903 gate.
We're going to add in this year especially 3 more seconds to recognize 3 lives that were lost just 2 weeks ago at the Boston Marathon.
Like sitting at a stoplight that had just turned green, it took a little bit of time to get moving. Gunter didn't cross the starting line until about 6:45.
The world is watching Oklahoma City today. You are, in fact, making a statement to the world today that together, united, we stand.
2.5 hours later, the final stretch of the course alongside Automobile Alley is packed with supporters cheering on runners. As they cross the finish line at Broadway and Northwest 7th Street, many marathoners fell to their knees, put their hands over their heads, rubbed their joints, and shared emotional hugs of congratulations with their running partners and supporters.
I cannot believe I just did that. I cannot believe it. I cannot believe all the people, the whole route that were out there to slap our hands and cheer us on. I just cannot even describe that feeling. It's so good that this town is here to cheer on complete strangers. I'm just in love with this city right now.
Nathan plans on running this half marathon for many years to come. For Assignment Radio, I'm Haley Thornton.
For parents who just watched their children graduate from college this weekend, prepare yourselves. Our next story is going to tap into your tear ducts. Assignment Radio ECU's Caitlin McLeod speaks with first-time father Corey Foreman about the birth of his son.
I'll never forget when I held my child for the first time. It was a feeling and experience unlike any other. I was a first-time father, and the previous 9 months of anticipation and planning had all been leading up to that day. My wife, Lindsay, called me when I was at work, and she told me she was having some minor contractions. She had gone into labor once before, 2 weeks prior, and she was still a week away from her due date, so I was thinking it wasn't the real thing. I left work and went home to check on her. When I got there, she was in quite a bit of pain, so I loaded her and all our stuff up into the car, and we headed to the hospital. When we got there, I called her parents and mine, and they headed out to meet us. A doctor came in and checked on my wife, and she told us that we'd have a baby within the next few hours. We were overjoyed, but the onset of nerves started to kick in as well. As labor progressed, the hours dragged out. The waiting part was really hard. I was so excited to see my son, and I didn't want my wife to be in any more pain. Lindsay's water broke about 6, and by 8:30 the doctors told her she was ready to push. He called in additional nurses, and they prepped the room for delivery. I remember my heart beating so fast. I held her hand and encouraged and cheered her on during those next few minutes. On June 18, 2009, at 8:52, my son was born. We named him Mason Lee Foreman. The doctor held him up for us to see and laid him on Lindsay's chest as the nurses wiped him off. He was crying and I kissed my wife's forehead. We were smiling ear to ear and my wife started talking to him and cried. I reached down to grab his hand and his tiny fingers wrapped around mine. She only held Mason for a few seconds before one of the nurses picked him up and carried him to a table on the other side of the room. Lindsay told me to go with him, so I did. Her mom came in for a peek at her grandson and then went to see her daughter. I watched as the nurses weighed and measured him, and continue to clean him up. The feeling of love was overwhelming, and I couldn't believe that he was mine. They let me get close and talk to him. He wiggled around and continued to cry. Finally, they wrapped him up in a blanket and picked him up. The nurse turned to me and said, "He's all yours." She handed him to me, and I could not believe the feeling of holding him in my arms for the first time and realizing I was a father. I looked down at him, and he tried to open his eyes, but never quite managed to fully do it. He had a lot of dark hair, just like me. He was so tiny, at only 7 pounds 4 ounces. I held him tight and looked back at my wife, who was already watching us. She smiled and signaled me to bring him back over. We were so proud at that moment, and to this day. Mason is about to turn 4 this June, and is the spitting image of me. He's my little buddy, and I couldn't imagine not having him in my life. We've recently found out that we're expecting our second child. I'm looking forward to all the experiences we'll have in the future with Mason and his little sibling. Becoming a father for the first time was amazing, and I can't wait for round 2.
The University of Oklahoma's college band is called The Pride. And that's exactly the emotion it elicits for many attending its performances. Coming up, Assignment Radio's Joey Adams finds out what it's like to play with the Pride for the first time.
Daniel Rodriguez grew up about an hour from Norman, so naturally, the Sooners were kind of a big deal. He knew from a young age he would probably never step foot on Owen Field as a football star, but he also knew that wasn't the only way. And in the fall of 2009, he fulfilled a lifelong dream when he sprinted onto Owen Field as a member of the Pride of Oklahoma. Here, Daniel tells us what it was like to take his first steps on Owen Field.
You know what's coming and then it happens, and you have about 10 steps before you get out of the tunnel, and you're in a full-on sprint because you don't have a lot of time to do it. You have to be there or else everything's ruined. And so you can hear the crowd, but then you step out and you can imagine 85,000 people just talking in conversation, how loud it is, much less 85,000 people screaming. It's something that you can't even describe on how to experience. It's one of those things. There's 300 of you in the band, but yet there's 85,000 people plus people, you know, on TV or whatever watching you, and they're all looking exactly at you and cheering for you. It's really unspeakable on how to explain. I got in band in 6th grade, and I remember my first OU game was 7th grade, and the band running out, and to this day still, just you get chills if you've ever been in band and you watch that, just because you see, like, you know that that's something you could accomplish one day and be a part of. And like I said, just thinking about it now, like, I get chills even just thinking about, you know, being a part of the band and all, everything that they get to do with it. Even from the second you get in Pride, you have a rehearsal that night, and you talk about everything, and every day you kind of work on it, and you just keep building towards it, and your anticipation for it just keeps growing and growing. And that's not even something, you know, as a freshman you understand. Every year that you work on it, even my second year in Pride, there's still that anticipation that you just keep growing and growing, and it's still, like, it's crazy just thinking about that I was actually able to be a part of all that. You have a morning rehearsal, which you go over everything and practice and rehearse for everything. And then you usually have about an hour, hour and a half to go change into your uniform. And then there's pep bands throughout the day that you have to be a part of. And then 2 hours before kickoff, you have a concert that you do for public out in the North Oval. And then you do a parade to the stadium, and then you get into the tunnel. And you usually have about 45 minutes to just kind of hang out in the tunnel. You get some water, you hydrate. Slowly, as it gets closer and closer, every section kind of has their ritual that they do, and you just kind of slowly and slowly everyone starts getting more pumped up and pumped up. And then right before everyone goes out, there's a chance that everyone does, as a whole band, you do. And there's two tunnels that you have. You have two tunnels, the away tunnel and the home tunnel, and they both do the same ritual. You know, every section kind of does their own thing. My section, personally, we all kind of hit our horns together. It was just one of the things we did. And you do your chants, and then you just get ready for the run-on. I didn't sleep at all the night before. I remember it was a late game, so we didn't have rehearsal till like 9 a.m. But me and a lot of the freshmen kind of in my section all went and hung out. We were just, all of us, you could just kind of tell we're all jittery, just kind of even just thinking about, like, man, in less than 24 hours, we're finally going to get to do the run-on that we've practiced so many times and we've heard about and most of us have seen before, and just been kind of the part of the reason that a lot of people do pride is pregame. That's one of the things that's the best thing you can ever experience in life. And so, yeah, I don't think any of us really slept that night. It's kind of even hard to explain. Like, just thinking about it, you kind of get chills. Like, I remember my first time ever. And it's not something you get used to. Every time I did it for the 2 years I was in it, it was one of the best experiences of my life every single time, just running on. Like, I mean, for most of us, you know, we all love sports. But how many people in the did sports but never got to do anything out of high school? It was kind of like we got to continue our pro career into college, kind of, but we did it through band instead of through sports.
For Assignment Radio, I'm Joey Adams.
The image that the world has of Oklahoma varies, but it tends to include cowboys, tornadoes, and horses. Assignment Radio reporter Kaylee Doherty recently spoke with two exchange students about their first experiences in the Sooner State.
My name is Adrian.
My name is Rich.
We are exchange students.
My name is Rich Dawson. I'm 21 years old. I'm from the University of Sheffield in England, and I study history.
My name is Adrian. I'm French. I'm from the University of Nice, and I'm from Montpellier. And I'm 24 years old, and this is like my fourth year.
We've been here since August of last year, on an exchange year, and we're going to be leaving in like 3 weeks.
When I came here, I didn't know anybody.
I knew one person before I came here.
The first day when we were moving in, and I was in the apartment, one of the first ones, and this boy came in and was like, "Hey, I'm your roommate. I'm British." And say, "Okay, well, I'm your roommate. I'm French." And then it went pretty easy, and yeah, we're very good friends now, yeah.
My first time in Oklahoma was crazy, y'all.
My first time in Oklahoma was definitely unforgettable.
Way down yonder in the Indian Nation, a cowboy's life is my occupation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born.
Before I came here, I had like the real kind of cowboy impression. I was actually kind of scared of coming here. You know, it's very, very different to back home. But then actually coming here, it's like completely different. You know, people are not all kind of cowboys, kind of liberal, especially like at OU. And I really like it. It's great.
Yeah, before I came, I thought we were going to see like a lot of rednecks everywhere, and yeah, just cowboy things. But actually, it was like completely different from what we thought before, and just completely amazing. Yeah.
Pardon my southern accent, pardon my southern drawl. It may sound funny, oh, but honey, I love y'all.
I think the Oklahomans definitely have an accent, but a more profound accent is a Texan accent for me. Very, like, the people from Dallas and stuff is very, very strong, and I love it. It's good.
The only weird thing in the language is they all say y'all. And,
hey, y'all.
Hey, y'all. I didn't know this word before, so I was kind of lost at the beginning, but people were warning me, like, don't worry, it's normal. And I was like, okay.
The weather here is great as well. It's crazy. It's so different to back home. Back home, it's just kind of very constant, average, boring weather. And then here, like, one day it's, you know, 90 degrees, the next day is freezing, then you have a tornado. Like, it's great. Yeah, the weather, you don't really want to visit England if you're just going to come for the weather. It's terrible. It rains a lot, it's cloudy, it's very gray skies, stuff like that.
Where I come from, it's really windy, but we don't have tornadoes, so it's like, we're not scared about the wind here. Like, if it becomes windy, you're like, wow, like, maybe I should hide somewhere, like, maybe it's gonna get worse, and you never know. You have these tornadoes, these earthquakes. Yeah. I don't know, like, when we have a storm back home, we just enjoy it, and we smile, like, we stay inside, and here, like, when we have a storm, we're like, oh, well, am I gonna die today, or what?
I think the thing that I'm going to take back are all the great friends that I've made, you know, all these connections with people from not only from, like, across Europe and South America and all the other exchange places, but American people as well. I've made some great friends here, and I hope to see everybody, like, in the future.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of new friends, and it's really a new point of view about the world in general.
People in England are very kind of... They're not cold, but they're kind of sarcastic, and here people are very open and warm. I think that's one of the biggest differences for me personally.
In general, like, when they treat us, and even, like, I mean, they can be nice for, like, no reason, and they can help you for no reason, just, like, because they want it. Like, the most amazing experience of my life. We're actually gonna visit each other more than... one time this summer, at least, maybe several times this summer, and then, like, yeah, for sure, several times.
And I think that's the same with a lot of the exchange students here. There's some real, real, like, strong friendships that have been made. I think we speak for everyone when we say we're going to see each other a lot more in the future.
Traveling abroad is a tricky thing. You learn and experience so much, and you meet new people, but it can be very isolating and lonely at times. Coming up, Assignment Radio's Anna Nushpal tells the story of the first time she felt she had found who she was in the context of another country.
Додека се барав себе си. Веќе летав над земји кои што само на карта ги имам видено. Додека се барав себе си. Веќе летав над пространото синило наречено океан. Е if I could tell my story the way I want to, this is how it would sound. While I was searching for myself, I was already in the sky above all those countries that I could only dream of, places that I had only seen in movies. While I was searching for myself, I was already flying over the vast blue ocean. While I was searching for myself, I was already walking through the airport with 1,000 questions flying on my head. While I was searching for myself, I started meeting new people, places, and things. While I was searching for myself, I managed somehow to get lost, to lose all I had until the moment I started the quest for finding me. My country is far away, and only few of you know where is it. It is so small that many of you could not even show it on the map. But Macedonia is really warm. Warm from the honest look of my parents. Warm from the real hugs of my friends. Warm from my longing for it. Far away. That is actually how I felt. Far away from everything that I knew. I was alone, lonely, and lost. But I was excited. I wanted to conquer those new places, to find them and feel them. My heart was beating with the rhythm of my country, but here, that rhythm was different. The melody that I make with my steps on these streets, it's not the same as those at home, surrounded by thousands and still alone, lonely, lost. Then I start thinking, okay, the rhythm of life is different, but there must be something at least similar. Here and there you can find people, if nothing else. I finally start finding myself. I found myself in new faces, streets, in new region. I found myself around people with huge smiles and hands open wide. I found myself on wide open path. Filled with energy, they start following my steps. I started creating new melodies with new people in new places. I found myself. But then, I found a fake smile. Yes, cold smile and hugs, empty words. As time passed by, I realized that they were fake because here the hearts of the people beats with different rhythm. Just like when you write your name in the sand along the shore, the first wave will fade your name, the second one will erase it completely. That's how I felt with my new friends, like a name written on the shore. I was afraid to be a friend, because I was afraid a wave would come and erase our friendship from their existence. But I didn't know that what I know now. Oh, the time flies. Days and weeks are passing by so fast. I learned that there is a way to keep my name on the coast and not to be erased from the waves of the sea. Now I wake up happy. I drink my morning coffee filled with happiness. I breathe deeply and remember the smell of the coffee in my country. Now both smell the same. I can feel the peace, the calmness, and harmony. I walk the street, and while walking, I feel new melody under my feet, in my ears, a new music in my heart. Now everything is crystal clear. It's a new language, but the words are the same. They talk about happiness, beauty, warmth. I meet people who have become my friends. I meet with their friends too. It reminds me of my friends at home. Now, both are equally dear to me. Now, the one who are very far away from me, soon they will be very close, and the others, so far from me. But I see both with eyes full of tenderness, eyes full of sincerity, and in return, I get warm and sweet smile. I have found myself, but in both countries, two very different worlds. And to be honest, I can't say for sure which one is the real one, the one that is mine. Maybe both are. Maybe.
Love. It's full of wonderful and awkward firsts. Assignment Radio's Kate Carlton has the story of two first loves gone very wrong.
First kisses are built up so much. Whether it's through sweet videos of them on YouTube.
We kissed on the lips!
No!
Woo!
Or movies.
Someday my prince will come.
But not everything always goes as planned. If I had one first that I could redo, it'd be my first kiss. And it's not necessarily because of the kiss itself, although it was nothing spectacular by any means. I want to redo it because of my reaction to the kiss. Before I begin, though, I need to point out two things. One, I was in first grade when this happened. This means I was a solid 6 years old, and subsequently, my frontal lobe and decision-making skills were not exactly fully developed. And two, for the sake of protecting the innocent, I'll call the boy John. Okay, so in first grade, all of our desks were set up in quads. John's quad was a few groups away from mine, but one day I watched him leave his chair and come over to where I was sitting. Now, I remember talking to John, but I don't ever remember having a crush on him. So needless to say, when he leaned in to kiss me on the cheek, I was shocked. So shocked that when I turned my head to see what he was doing, his kiss actually landed on my eyeball. And it was open. I had no idea how to react. Thankfully, it was at the end of the school day, so we left shortly after. But that night, I was so embarrassed and astounded that I began to plot my revenge. After all, this kid could have had cooties, and I just got a kiss on my eye. So I had to do something about it. So the next morning comes, but I don't do anything. Instead, I wait until the end of the day, and I pull out my pencil box. I take out the Elmer's glue, and I walk over to John's desk. I unscrew the top and begin pouring the glue on John. Once again, let me be clear that this is not a proud moment of mine. That's exactly why I wish I could have a clean slate. This will forever be the first time a boy kissed me, and I ruined it by pouring glue on him. Sometimes we just don't have as much of a say in our firsts as we would like to. Paige Willett, a former KGOU employee, reminisces on her first breakup that went anything but smoothly. She was in ninth grade and had been dating her boyfriend for a few months. He was in the school musical, though, so she hadn't seen him much. One weekend, when Paige went with the boy's family to the mall, things started to unravel.
We were just walking around, shopping, goofing off, and then we saw this girl, and I mean, I had never seen her before, I didn't know who she was, and he, like, screams her name, he's like, "Ah, hi!" And he, like, runs up to her and, like, gives her just this big hug, and they're, like, laughing, And he, like, didn't even introduce me as his girlfriend. And his twin brother even leaned over to me and he was like, "Are you jealous yet?" And he was, like, cracking up about it. I just decided, you know, I'm gonna let it go. It's not that big of a deal. And he told me that they had been working on the musical together, which this had been going on for like a month, the musical had. But I was just like, oh, okay, you know, like, yeah, you worked on the musical together. And then everything went normally on for like another couple weeks or something like that. And then pretty much all of a sudden, he just like stopped talking to me. He would not answer my phone calls, my texts. He avoided me at school. He would not eat lunch with me. After the first week, I was like, okay, something's wrong. Eventually, after another week, I was like, okay, I've had enough of this. He's been totally avoiding me. And I was like, I know we're breaking up now. Then I basically planned when I was gonna get broken up with. Because I wasn't gonna let him have the satisfaction of me breaking up with him, because I was like, he's the one being a jerk. The day we broke up, I was just like super nice to him. Like, I sent him nice text messages and everything, and I like tried to see him after every class, and he just like avoided me, like practically like he would see me and like run away from me. And so finally, towards the end of the day, he was like, hey, do you want to meet me over by math class after school or whatever? And I was like, okay, sure, you know. And I was like, this is so happening right now. And so I went over there and met him, and he was super nervous. He was like stuttering and shaking. I'm kind of like laughing inside, which sounds really maniacal and awful, but I totally was. And then we were walking towards the front of the school, and he was all like, hey, you know, I think that and then my choir teacher sees me from across the cafeteria. And she, like, runs over and she's like, hey, guys, what's up? And we were like, hey, you know. And she was like, I don't know, ask us questions about choir t-shirts or something. So, and then she, like, went away. So he got interrupted while breaking up with me. And so then he finally did. And I, you know, 15, so I was mad and heartbroken over 3 months. Come to find out, though, he had been talking to that other girl for that 2 weeks that he was ignoring me. The next day, they started dating. And also the next day, I went to choir, and my teacher walked up to me, and she's like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? And I was like, yeah, sure. And so she's like, was I interrupting something yesterday? Was he, like, asking you out? And I laughed, and she was like, what? I was, wasn't I? And I was like, he was actually breaking up with me. But it all works out, because we ended up being really good friends, and so now we're best friends, and I'm engaged to another guy who's pretty wonderful.
Maybe when people say, the first is the worst, the second is the best, the third is the one with the treasure chest, they actually mean it. For Assignment Radio, I'm Kate Carlton.
If you're a longtime listener of Assignment Radio, this voice might sound familiar to you.
The eastern United States, the Atlantic Ocean, Europe, Africa, and the Mediterranean Sea separate us from Iraq. Both Oklahoma and Iraq love football, but their football is what we call soccer.
I recently invited this guy to KGOU to chat about his experience working at the station several years ago. As it turns out, we had a lot in common.
I'm here in the studio with Arash Davari, the first host of Assignment Radio ever.
have to say I'm a little excited right now because I've heard all of your episodes because I did the archives, and it's kind of weird to hear your voice matched with your face.
Yeah, I'd like to apologize too for what you had to bear through to listening to all those old from a guy that didn't know what he was doing.
Actually, I listened to literally every episode of Assignment Radio ever, and we've been doing this since the fall of 2004. And I have to say, I was inspired by your style.
Oh, really?
You had a really conversational style.
Yeah, mostly because I didn't know what I was doing.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's like that quote from Picasso where he says, every child is born an artist.
Right.
And the trick is to keep them that way.
Yeah. It was definitely, yeah, a learning experience, but it was a lot of fun. So, thank you. That's very nice. That's very nice to hear.
Could you tell me kind of the story of how you got involved with Assignment Radio?
Sure. Basically, I was looking for a summer job. I think if I remember correctly, I was just looking on the OU kind of jobs, student jobs website, and you know, I came across some positions in that were affiliated with the journalism college. So I applied for what was actually a sort of drive time newscaster type thing, you know. So basically just, I think whenever All Things Considered is on, we would have these little breaks that we could, you know, jump in with Oklahoma news and traffic updates, you know, around 5 o'clock. So I applied for that, and this guy, Scott Gurian, who was the news director at the time, got back to me, and he was like, hey man, you know, you look from your resume like you'd be a good fit, so you know, why don't you come and interview. So ended up getting the job. And so through the training process, they would have me sit in an adjacent room to Scott while Scott was actually doing the live you know, drive time news deal or whatever, and I would read off the same script that he was reading, but you know, it was, you know, into the mic that was being recorded by the computer. So, but I could never talk straight, so I would always stumble over my words, or like a couple of words here and there. Just, you know, it was not, wasn't cutting it, wasn't good enough. So I don't remember if it was Karen or Scott, they came to me and they're like, hey listen, we're starting this sort of student news radio show type thing, would you be interested in doing that, you know, that way you don't have to deal with the live radio aspect, and you can kind of get in the studio and take as many takes as you need, and then also you get more exposure to things like piecing a show together and the editing software and editing the show together and stuff like that. So it actually ended up being pretty cool, so it was a good move. My inability to talk straight apparently ended up being beneficial for me in the long run.
Sometimes it works out.
Yeah,
sometimes it works. I don't know if I could do live. I don't know, I've never done it.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't even like a nervous thing. It was weird. I'll tell you, this is actually pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I would try to read off the piece of paper normally, in my normal voice, I would inevitably stumble over some words. But if I had spoken some sort of like cowboy voice or some accent, yeah, like some, you know, sort of southern drawl type thing, I would never have an issue.
Interesting.
But I could have, you know, of course I couldn't do that.
Well,
I'd be a proper radio man talking with like a cowboy.
You know, I mean, whatever works.
It's
seriously
true. It's true.
If it worked, nobody would know because they don't know.
They wouldn't know
what you really sound like. But I mean, obviously you got it under control for Assignment Radio.
I did.
You were very, I didn't hear any stuttering or messed up words. But another thing I noticed about your work on Assignment Radio was the use of music. Throughout the episodes that you did, I was like, oh, that's a good song. Oh, that's a good song.
Yeah, that was a little bit of me and Scott. He would, as far as my taste in music, I listen to a lot of rock music, so that's definitely where I was drawing most of my music from. But Scott had this, he listened to a lot of different stuff. Some stuff, I would say, and I don't mean this I'm not trying to be mean, but it was weird to me. It was just different, you know, and it was strange to me that somebody listened to such you know, all, me and all my friends listen to rock, or some of them listen to rap. You know, that's yeah. about the extent of it. He was listening to all this different world music and stuff. But it was cool. So he would loan me CDs. And so I would be like, oh, man, this is pretty cool. So I'd pick these little snippets out of it for, you know, transitions. And so that was that's Scott Gurian's lasting impact on my life.
Props to Scott Gurian once yeah. again. Once yeah. again. My music tends to go towards the electronic spectrum.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I use a lot of that. And I don't know, something about it just makes it feel like when you have your own music, it's almost as fun as putting the show together,
mm-hmm.
is putting the music together.
Yeah, it is. That was just as much fun to me as like the interviewing and you know, putting stories together was actually piecing the show together and using music and, you know, doing the editing and sort of, I don't know, getting into the sort of the technical side of things. That was a lot of fun for me, too.
Speaking of interviews, do you have a favorite memory of an interview or a horrible memory where it went wrong?
There was never an interview that went really horribly wrong that I can remember. Maybe I've blacked it out, like just been stricken from the record in my brain. But I interviewed, it was 04, so the election was going on. So I interviewed my mom, which is kind of... Which is kind of, I feel like, maybe a cop-out to a degree. But she had an interesting perspective coming from... Iran, growing up in Iran, and then coming to the States to.
Yeah, didn't she? She was emphasizing like the importance of voting.
Yeah, she's very, very passionate about that. She felt very strongly that people should exercise that right that we have. And so, it was a little bit of a cop out, but I also thought that she had a very interesting perspective.
To me, voting is the most precious right you have. Not very many countries have that right, if you have to exercise it. Whoever goes to Washington, D.C., they will make decisions that they affect your life. And you have to be involved.
This is my last show ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The sign-off?
This is my very last show. And I'm not going to get all saccharine, but I'm sad. I'm very bummed.
How long have you been doing this?
Two years. But do you have any... it's a little corny, but do you have any words of wisdom for me?
As far as... the show goes, or just in general, life in general? What do you want to tell?
I guess I should specify. I don't really know what I want. I guess that's the problem.
That's like, I can relate. That's
yeah,
okay.
You know what it's like to have this. It's a cool gig, right? Like, it's an awesome, fun job.
It is.
And I guess I'm a little daunted by the looking outside.
Looking
and,
beyond. What's, yeah. What is out there after Assignment Radio? Nothing.
God.
Nothing of worth. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, God.
I will say that after just college in general, I mean, I went, there is a lot of time for you to do a lot of things, I think. My biggest problem in college was I stressed out about the next step, and then without understanding that there's not just one next step. Like, I don't graduate college and then there's just one thing for 60 mm-hmm. years and then I die, you know?
Yeah.
I had a problem wrapping my head around that. There's, you know, I graduated at 23, you know, I was 23 years old. So there's a lot of time to do a number of things. So if you, whatever ends up being next for you, try it out for a while and then maybe it's awesome and you do that forever. And maybe it's okay. And then you find something else to do after that. So that's, I don't know, maybe you already have that mentality. Maybe.
No, that's actually really good advice. Because I do have that mentality that you were talking about earlier, where I'm like, oh my God, no matter what decision I make, no matter what door I open, all the other doors are closing.
Right.
Like you only get one door.
in it. I think it's kind of built into you in high school, especially,
because
there's so much emphasis on getting into the right school, getting good grades, and it has this sort of rubric for success, and you will be successful if you do this. And when you're entering a field like I'm entering either broadcasting or film, and I love them both equally, and I geek out about them both equally. And it does. It feels like I have to choose between them, and I just can't. They're both so fascinating. So I love that, and I'm going to try and use it as my mantra that, you know, it's not the only step.
Right. It's you can do, right, exactly. You do broadcast for a while. You could do film for a while, or flip it, vice versa. Or you could do, one of them, and then you're like, something else comes along that you're like, you know what, that would be awesome, and it's nothing, you know, nothing at all related to what you've been doing previously.
Like I discover like a passion for taxidermy, just one day. It's like, oh my god, how did I not see that?
Yeah, one day you find yourself in like this lodge, just like an elk lodge, and you see all these awesome moose heads, or like full size bears just like rearing back. You're like, I love that. I want that. I want to create that.
I don't know why I chose that as my fantasy possibility job. No. Because it's so horrifying to me.
It is. It was a good pull. It was good. It was random enough, but also accessible enough for it to be funny.
Thank you. Well said. And thank you for coming. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I hope you've enjoyed coming. Even this isn't your old studio, but just coming back to the KVOU.
Yeah. It's... No, yeah. Thanks. I was thrilled whenever you got in touch with me.
Good.
And so I jumped to the chance to come back and talk to you about the old days. So yeah, thanks for having me. It's good stuff for sure.
To everyone who's tuned into Assignment Radio these past few years, I would also like to say thank you. It's been an incredible time in my life, and I can't believe it's over. It's bittersweet because I'm grateful to have learned so much here, but it's really hard to leave the family I found at KGOU. Every person at the station has helped me, encouraged me, and given me great advice. I would like to specifically thank Jim Johnson, Karen Hope, and Brian Hardzinski for teaching me everything I know about radio and helping me to find my voice when I wasn't quite sure what it would sound like. Today I walked across the stage at graduation, and I thought of you guys, and I'm not going to cry. We have some business to take care of, okay? You've been listening to Assignment Radio, a bi-weekly student-produced public affairs program focusing on news and events. The views and opinions expressed during this show are not necessarily those of KGOU or its licensee, the University of Oklahoma. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. So please visit us on the web at kgou.org. I'm Meredith Everett, and as always, thank you for listening.